From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Kojo Namdi Show. I'm Mark Fisher, sitting in for Kojo. Coming up this hour, it's our first Tech Tuesday of the month, and you know what that music means. Bar the doors, keep the kids away from the radio. Well, it's actually just time for your monthly fix of the computer guys and Guyette. We'll help you.
Guyette!
Wow, a new twist on that.
A new twist.
All right.
We'll help you figure out if it's time to divest your Microsoft stock or buy some more, whether your next Netflix movie will come in the mail or via broadband download, and whether the rumors about the next iPhone are real or just more hokum. And, of course, it's time to get answers to your questions about hardware and software from John Gilroy, WAMU computer guy and director of business development at Solutions Developers, Bill Harlow, WAMU computer guy and former Mac genius. He's now a Macintosh consultant with Mid-Atlantic Consulting. And Allison Druin, WAMU computer guyette and director of the Human-Computer Interaction Lab at the University of Maryland at College Park. And we should start out, I think, with this new survey that's out there about how connected everybody is and when they were figuring out how to scale this thing, how to set up the research, they had to bring me in because they had to set a baseline, okay? And the baseline was, this guy has nothing. And
we're talking rotary phone here, Mark?
You know, I have one in the basement, and I'm figuring out a way to get it back
so
in action.
Technically, you can say you have a rotary phone at home.
I do. That's right. But, you know, just a quick survey, how many gadgets do you have on your person as you go about your day? Let's start with Bill.
Well, if you don't count my laptop bag, because I do put that down occasionally, I'm down to one. I've got just the iPhone. But,
but the laptop counts.
Okay,
what
so
else
yeah,
is in
laptop,
there?
Hard drive, a bunch of cables, and my iPhone. So not too bad.
In the 4 or 5 range. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, come back 3 years ago when I had a two-way pager and 2 cell phones, and this is definitely an improvement.
Okay, Allison?
Well, I got my BlackBerry, and usually I'm carrying at least one of my laptops. At times I'm carrying 2 of them. Yes, it's embarrassing. 1 Mac, 1 PC. But that's about it. But I actually tend to go offline a lot. I'm sort of an unlisted number sometimes.
Whoa, radical. Mm-hmm. And John.
Uno. I just have a cell phone. That's all I need. I don't need no stinking BlackBerry. I don't
wow.
need no stinking iPod. I just have one. I don't use that often.
You're so last century, John.
I'm very, very 2000.
Oh, you are.
A man of my own heart. Well, I ask because there is this survey that's come out that shows that 36% of workers around the world are using a minimum of 4 devices for work and access to applications. I mean, this seems like one of those industry surveys where everything's a bit hyped. But if you believe what they're saying, there are people on every continent who are wandering around, and a substantial number of folks with 4, 5, 6, 7 devices.
Great opportunity for our listeners to get involved and go to conversation.wamu.org and chip in and tell us how many devices you have. I think they're starting to use SurveyMonkey here on this website. If we can get SurveyMonkey working, if we can get that little forum, we can find out how many listeners have. Maybe 7 is normal for all I know. Hey.
Well, you can join the conversation by calling 1-800-433-8850 or email us at kojo, K-O-J-O, at wamu.org. Are we ever going to get to a point, I mean, is this nirvana? Of having one device that does everything that you carry around with you and that's all you need, or are people going to have to continue to fumble forever?
That's a really good question. I mean, because the other thing, too, is that the number of devices doesn't necessarily mean how truly connected you are, because I regularly turn off that cell phone when I'm sitting there with the laptop, or I regularly go offline on the laptop so that I can actually write something, so that things don't go popping in as I'm writing. So I'd like to know more about that survey, because there's a big difference between how much hardware and what are you doing with your software.
They claim that 16% of the folks responding have more than 7 devices. I mean, is that
believe that? They're on drugs.
They're counting their blow dryers. They're counting. What are they doing?
counting. I like to grab a couple of them, turn them upside down, shake them, and see what comes out.
I'm just trying to think
out.
What those devices could be. I mean, if you add them up. I don't
know,
think
they
named seven devices.
Maybe they never got rid
carry.
Of their pager from 7 years ago. They're still keeping that.
Your PDA. I mean,
I have a slightly outdated device in my pocket. It's called Keys.
Yeah. Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah. There we go. there's a question from Cindy in Reston, Virginia, asking about another way to be connected, not something you'd carry in your pocket, but she's asking what your guests think of the website Lifehacker. And, Bill, I know you have some thoughts about what is Lifehacker and why should we care?
Well, it's really kind of nifty. It's essentially a lot of just day-to-day tips. A lot of them are technically oriented. Sometimes they're really silly tips about, you know, just day-to-day stuff. Like I saw one that was about, you know, how to keep track of what clothes are necessary to keep in your closet. You know, every time you wear something, you hang the shirt back with a hanger reversed, and you know, look back, you know, 3 months later, wow, I never wear those three shirts. I can donate those to charity. So there's all kinds of stuff in there.
I need to go online to see that. I could talk to some really bizarre people that way and know that as well, Bill.
But they're all in one place.
Okay,
I mean, you have to search them out in real life.
Oh. Do you really want to search them out? Okay, keep going. Go ahead.
But I mean, it's the same guys who run Gawker. So, you know, Gizmodo, Jalopnik, Kotaku, a lot of other popular blogs. So there's a lot of interesting information there. You know, obviously a lot of it is silly, but there is some neat stuff. And I do go there from time to time because there's stuff it's obvious, but you may not have thought of it.
An answer in search of a problem is what it is. It's you just go to Google and find out how many shirts to wear. I'm sure you can find it in Google faster.
But you know how it is. You've got like, you know, as that example shows, you got maybe more clothes than you really need. So it's a good way to track.
Yeah, I'm going to worry about that.
Well, I know you wear the same white shirt every day, but some people do change.
John, you don't have these problems, okay?
Well, speaking of having lots of things in your pocket, Stephanie in Fredericksburg, what do you have with you?
Well, I have a phone, and it is 5 years old, so you could call me a slow adapter, although my children have pointed out to me that it does indeed take pictures, and I didn't even know that. So not all of us are on the cutting edge of this technical revolution.
It's amazing. You know, Stephanie, my 19-year-old son lost his phone, and I went to get a replacement. It was a free replacement, and it had a built-in camera. And it was free. It's amazing how inexpensive technology is now from
really
just
is.
A few years ago.
But the other side of that equation, here's Brian in Ellicott City. Brian, I guess you have a little bit more than just a cell phone.
Yeah, I actually have two devices. I have a iPhone, and I have a Apple MacBook. And with those two devices, I can do everything. I have, with a MacBook, I have an Apple computer, and technically I have a Windows computer. And with the iPhone, I have my web browser, my, you know, iPod, I have my cell phone, just about anything. I have my GPS unit.
Photo album.
I need the photo album, everything I need, my schedule and calendar, and it syncs between both devices. It only syncs to the Mac side, but between those two, that's it. But I'm actually, I work in the field of computer and technology. I see people who do have an Apple, you know, a PC, a BlackBerry, a regular phone, and, you know, an umbrella or something on their hip, too.
Well, I mean, there really do seem to be two kinds of people, you know, folks who want to pare it down and folks who kind of relish the idea of having as many wires jumping all over the car and the front seat as possible. Thanks for the call. But he mentioned the iPhone. The iPhone does seem to have simplified things to some extent for some users. And Allison, this is now the first anniversary of the iPhone. How much of a difference has it really made? And what are we looking toward now with the next move with the iPhone?
Well, one of the things that people are talking about is actually how much data that iPhone users are actually using in comparison to other cell phone users. It's not a surprise because on the iPhone, you actually can do something on the web and it's actually easier. So if you make it, maybe they will come. But it's really interesting because what may be happening is once the speed up in the network happens that they're talking about, this could be the platform for the 21st century that's really going to be our computing platform. What do you think, Bill? Am I crazy? What?
You'll definitely see it take over a lot of computing tasks, but there's no way I would use it as my only computing platform. I mean, it's great for email. It's great for going on the web and researching things, but, you know, I'll type, you know, a couple paragraphs at most, and I'm...
Well, that keyboard thing I hate. I hate that.
I'm fine with it, but there's no way I would... Yeah, I would not write an essay on it.
I'm a BlackBerry girl because I really need that feedback on the keyboard thing, and it's really hard tapping away on a screen. I have a hard time with it.
Because you don't get any, you don't, nothing
I don't
comes
get
back in your
any
finger.
Feedback. Yeah. So now we need force.
How about a noise? Would a noise do it for you?
Not really.
There is a noise.
There is a noise. I need a force feedback screen. What do you think, guys? I'm ready. Force feedback. You can do it. A little pushback on the screen. That would work. Yeah. Anyway.
Speaking of screens, I think the impact of iPhone has been felt up in Redmond by a guy named Bill Gates. And they're looking at new ways of using monitors and taking this approach of a touch screen and applying it to a larger monitor. And I think they may be going down the wrong path here, but they are certainly excited about it. And that may be, I don't know if iPhone is going to be the same in 2 or 3 years, but I think iPhone Volume 4, Volume 5, it may solve a lot of the keyboard issues, and I just don't think that this concept of touching and moving, it works good with a handheld device, but with a desktop, I don't know.
Exactly. I've messed with them, and aside from specialized applications like in the operating room or in a restaurant system, I can't imagine doing a lot of work on at my desk all day lifting my hand up to that screen. I mean, typing and mousing is just going to be easier, and just easier on the body too.
And Bill, as you look at the next generation of the iPhone, there's talk now, I guess, of a higher resolution camera being part of the package.
That's one of the rumors. I don't know if that's going to be a real focus for Apple. The big rumors I do hear are the possibility of an actual GPS, because currently the iPhone, you have to triangulate your location using the cell towers or the Wi-Fi via IP address. And that's one thing. So you'll have a true GPS and Google Maps. And I think the one that's all but a done deal is a 3G iPhone. That is one that uses a faster cellular network for much higher speed data when you're not on Wi-Fi. That's the one everyone clamored for when the iPhone was first released. And a year later, it's the one that people are still clamoring for.
And Mark, there's a big meeting coming up in about a week or two.
Yeah, June 9th, I think, is when you're going to see the big announcement.
Big Apple Developers Conference.
Yeah, the Worldwide Developers Conference.
In 1 month, we'll know a lot more about this speed issue. And that's been the complaint about the iPhone is speed. And this may resolve it.
And may do that.
But there's going to be also a lot of new third-party apps soon.
That's right. The new iPhone software 2.0.
That's right. And so that is going to finally
have
the brains of everybody coming in there and using what's really good on the iPhone.
And a third-party app is something that is developed outside.
Well, right, because right now you buy an iPhone and you run on it what Apple gives you, and that's it. Aside from a few web apps, which can do a few things. So the idea is now that if you're a smart developer and you want to use the iPhone like a platform, you can write for it, sell or give away programs, and distribute them through iTunes.
I have to admit, last week I was having dinner with the CEO in one of these restaurants in downtown D.C., and he had two phones with him. He didn't have seven, he had two. He was talking on one, and the other, he was showing me pictures of his boat on his iPhone. So maybe they put them all together, but what's the best tool for the best application?
That's right.
One for each hand. Here's an email from Ling asking about Google's newly acquired service called Grand Central. And, John, what is Grand Central, and will it be worth it?
Yeah, it's a great topic, and I think without the iPhone, it might have been a big hit. What has happened in the last 5 or 6 years? Large organizations, 400 or 500 people, 1,000 people, they've moved their telephony to something called VoIP, Voice Over Internet Protocol. And what this affords you, it gives you stuff like Find Me, Follow Me. You can screen calls. You can work at a remote number. Whatever software can do, you can do with your phone. It's amazing. And what this company's done is decided to do it with a cell phone. The founder had, I think, two phones, maybe a phone at work, phone at home, and a cell phone, and he wanted them to all ring at the same time. And he came up with Grand Central. And Google bought it out, and it's kind of this little vacuum cleaner that Google's doing is kind of trying to position itself in the world of telephony. And I think for people who have a Cisco system at work or something from Interactive Intelligence, you assume everyone in the world's got Find Me, Follow Me. You just assume you can screen calls. You assume all your voice messages are voice, WAV files. In fact, I'm doing a conference call this afternoon. It's going to be recorded and saved in our SharePoint server as a WAV file. But I think for consumers, this is new. It got beat up by the iPhone, didn't it?
Yeah, but here's the problem with it. All right, my husband loves this service. All right,
have him invite me, by the way. I couldn't get in.
But anyway, he loves Grand Central. Okay, but here's the problem. He needs a little chip to put in his head to remind him where he needs to tell the thing to ring. So he works with people on the West Coast. We got the phone ringing at home, waking us all up because my husband forgot to tell
them. Your father?
Not my father. Yeah. My father's another story with his cell phones. But anyway, because my husband basically is, putting his kids to bed, putting the kids to bed, and what's happening? Everything's ringing all over the place.
It does Find Me, Follow Me. It follows you wherever you have to
be. It's a problem. Well, so we
why
need to
is
put
this
chips
a good
in
thing? I mean,
I don't think it's a good thing, but he loves it.
It's a good thing for people who want to be in touch. If you are on a support desk, I think that's important. If you walk out of the office, you can have a call forwarded to your cell phone. There are situations now where you can be sitting at your desk at the office and want to drive downtown to have lunch with Mark Fisher, and you switch the call to your cell phone.
It's true. Not everybody's got it.
How is this different from call forwarding?
Well, it's different because it's electronically based. It's centralized, Grand Central, right. And it can compress things into WAV files, too. And there's a couple other features there. But I think most large organizations have them already. And
well, most people don't have desk jobs, you know, and so everyone's wandering around. And so that's really part of what's going on there.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll get into whether there really is going to be a $100 laptop worth the name. And we'll do that with the computer guys, John Gilroy, Bill Harlow, and Allison Druin, here on the Kojo Namdi Show. I'm Mark Fisher. We'll be right back.
Good afternoon. You're listening to WAMU 88.5. I'm Matt McCleskey. Coming up at 2 o'clock, it's Tell Me More with Michelle Martin.
Next time on Tell Me More, so the gal pals of Sex and the City knocked Indiana Jones from box office supremacy.
At 11:30? Oh, that's a booty call.
No, it's not. He's a waiter. He just got off work.
But what do the moms have to say about it? I'm Michelle Martin. The Mocha Moms go to the movies next time on Tell Me More.
That's coming up at 2 o'clock here on WAMU 88.5. Then at 4, join us for all the day's top news on all things considered, including the latest from the WAMU 88.5 news team.
Two of Benita Jax's daughters are being laid to rest today, 5 months after their decomposing bodies were found in their mother's row house in southeast D.C. I'm Jessica Gallagher. I'll have that story this evening during All Things Considered right here on WAMU 88.5.
That's All Things Considered beginning at 4 o'clock.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from the Association of American Railroads. Today's freight railroads are committed to working hard for the environment by moving a ton of freight 436 miles on just 1 gallon of fuel. More online at freightrailworks.org. From Hodgson Consulting, an Ectron Gold partner, providing content management solutions for clients' web-based initiatives. Hodgson Consulting, fueled by technology, powered by people. On the web at HodgsonConsult.com. From the German Embassy and the German Information Center, now celebrating the 60th anniversary of the Berlin Airlift. In 1948, the airlift created a legacy of friendship. More information is at Germany.info.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Fisher of The Washington Post, sitting in for Kojo Namdi, and we're talking this hour with the computer guys and gal. Gal's better than guyette?
I don't know. I've got to get used to it. I've got to think about it.
That's Alice.
Guyette is worth more points in Scrabble, though.
That's true, though. A lot of one point letters there. Mm. Allison Druin is a guyette, I guess. Bill Harlow and John Gilroy are here as well. And Allison, tell us a little bit about the latest effort to produce the $100 laptop. This one, I gather, looks a little bit more like an e-book reader.
Yeah. Well, okay, so if you've been following the $100 laptop that now sells actually for $200, but you can't get it without buying two for $400.
Crystal clear.
Okay.
All the listeners understand.
All right. Nicholas Negroponte just announced the $75 laptop, and essentially it looks like two touchscreens put together, and it actually looks like an ebook reader. Essentially, it's a single square with a hinge in the center, and the idea is
about how big.
It's actually smaller than the XO, the current XO, and I would say it's probably just a little bit bigger than two adult hands to be able to hold. I've only gotten near one very slightly, but anyway, it's so here's the idea: is that either it can mimic a laptop, so on one screen you've got the keyboard and you see you see your images, or you can turn it into an ebook reader and you're reading on two faces. Now, to be perfectly honest with you, this is not coming out until 2010, if that. And generally, it's very interesting because generally a company doesn't try and here's the new stuff and then kill what's going on in the pipeline. So this was a little surprising. But on the other hand, We're all sitting there thinking, okay, I'd like to see the usability studies on a full keyboard that's a screen that now we're going to be killing our children's fingers with screen keyboards because we're going to be typing
and
on
this
screen.
One, this one has what, your toddler size keyboard? Or?
Supposedly it's an adult size. It's got to be better, to be perfectly honest with you, than the rubbery green keyboard that was, you know, minuscule size for little tot's hands.
It's not like you have to type on it like a typewriter, though, so you're not going to require that much pressure to really type anything out. I think the real issue is how do you touch type on a touchscreen keyboard?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no feedback, and if you
exactly.
rest your hand at all the keys, it can't tell what you're going to press next.
That's right.
I would like to take this argument for inexpensive computers and flip it to the other end about Apple computers. And Apple Insider, this is something that I don't even want to mention, but I'm going to mention on the air. 66% of computers that sell for over $1,000 are Apple brand. I mean, more and more people are looking at the laptops from Apple and saying, yes, yes, yes. And so it's interesting that...
So it's an Obama-Clinton divide.
Yeah,
not to get too touchy here.
Yeah. It's just, I never thought this would happen, but it's fascinating. I mean, interesting that the lower end, they're talking about Linux and they're talking about
sure.
Windows, but the upper end here, and people don't seem to have any problem with spending the high dollars for Apple.
I guess when they've decided that, it's like, if I'm going to spend that money in buying an Apple, that must be the mindset, you know, sort of like, you know, buying a BMW to some people.
Just assume it's going
right.
to be...
Is it
that's
just
right.
for the cachet, really?
For some people, it's got to be. I mean, when I worked for Apple, there was a large collection like that. But honestly, when there was a switch to OS X, there were a lot of geeks who jumped on board and really wanted an Apple for that reason.
Yeah, but it's also more than that. I mean, you know, the premium small computing that Apple's doing. I mean, let's face it. Me, okay, 10 years of a PC and suddenly I'm with Macintosh because basically I don't trust my PC anymore.
Right.
There's more hard drives blowing up. There's more, power supplies. It's incredible. And many people, that Vista thing, scaring the daylights out of them. I'm out of here.
So this change, you think, is more a reaction against Microsoft than it is a move, an embrace of Apple?
I think it may be a combination. I think all the stars have aligned at the same time.
Well, you know, in the business world, they say you can never get fired for buying IBM. I mean, and I think people have this mindset, you never get fired for buying Intel. All of a sudden, well, now it's an Intel chip in there. Well, Intel's solid. We know Intel. And they can run Windows on this, too. All of a sudden,
you have
the tipping
safety
points
net.
Like Intel,
yeah,
Windows,
exactly.
The tipping points pushing and pushing and pushing.
And other than people who actually work in the computer field, why would other folks be buying computers that are in that over $1,000 class?
I guess a lot of it is just, you know, multimedia is part of it. I mean, that's one thing Apple has pushed with the whole iLife suite. You know,
right.
you can, you know, and it's also, it's less about consuming and more about creating, too, to a degree. So people who want to take pictures and edit them or share them with people or begin to make music or edit their home movies in a manner that looks nice. I mean, all that, you buy like an iMac today and it's got all that built in. You just do it.
And the back to this push and pull question of Microsoft versus Apple, an email from Kathy who's asking inevitably, I guess, about Windows WP. She says she's visually impaired and can use Windows WP. She doesn't want to switch to Vista because in addition to the problems that sighted people will have, the increased graphics of Vista will be problematic for her. So if we're comfortable with Windows WP, will we be able to keep our XP for a while? That's the question, John.
Well, you know, if you watch the press releases on this over the last year, and you put in a wall and graph it, you see this initial stonewalling position, and then kind of a compromise, and then maybe and all of a sudden we have positions from Microsoft. They're very fuzzy on what's going to happen to XP, and now we have this hardline guy, this bulldog Steve Ballmer, who's going to be in town tonight.
You're having dinner with him.
I'm having him and 1,000 of his closest friends.
Yeah,
Hyatt.
That's the hence the nice tie he's wearing today.
And I'll ask him if I can get within 10 feet of him, and I'll say, "Well, what is it?"
We don't normally have people wearing formal wear to the studio. Here,
yeah, right? The tuxedo is fine. officially, here's the word on XP. System builders can ship XP until January of 2009 and mainstream support until April of 2009 and extended support until April of 2014. And that's probably going to get pushed out. I mean, that seems to what I think what Microsoft is doing is they're listening to the audience and responding. And maybe we'll have a big breakthrough announcement tonight at the Grand Hyatt. Steve Ballmer says, hey, well, we'll see what happens.
Jennifer in Richmond with an email saying she got a new computer 3 weeks ago, and sadly, it came with Vista. 3 weeks later, she still hasn't been able to really use it. It's been nonstop compatibility problems. It doesn't play well with anything. She goes on, I hate it. It's so awful. I've been seriously contemplating sending the computer back and getting a Mac instead. Last month, one of the computer guys said Vista is pretty. pretty, she asks. What do I care about whether or not it looks like the inside of a smoothie when it doesn't work well and functions have been moved or modified? Yeah, in ways that don't make sense. Even if I keep it, I'm going to be buying a copy of XP, wiping this horrible thing off, and going back to something functional.
Allison.
Whoa. Hey, look, what this is, this email is so not unique, okay? I mean, I suspect this is one small example of why Mac is gaining market share. But here's the challenge, okay? We've all got our old software apps that we love, okay? And unless you're married to my husband, who actually likes to upgrade everything faster than you blink, you want to have things work that you've had work. And then, of course, how heavy duty does our computers have to be to run this thing, all right? And so the combination of the compatibility with how slow the OS may run makes it so people are frustrated. You know, it's just insane. And I'm totally with you. I'm there. I'm sitting here saying, okay, what kind of MacBook am I getting? And, you know, that's what we're working on now.
You can join the conversation with the computer guys at 1-800-433-8850 or email us at kojo@wamu.org. I'm Mark Fisher of The Washington Post, sitting in for Kojo. And we are joined by Allison Druin, Bill Harlow, and John Gilroy. And getting back to that conversation about the from the high end of the Apple back down to the low end of those $100 laptops, we are, in the land of low-cost, ultra-portables, and everyone's trying to find a way to capture that market. Allison, what's the best thing for someone to do if they want one of those very low-cost?
Well, it's interesting because, the one laptop per child movement actually spurred this on in some way, and Intel was, one of the early players. And now you have Acer's Aspire 1, and you have Dell's just announcing the Mini Inspiron. Essentially, they're all under around $500. 8.9 9-inch display. Question is, do you want Windows only? Do you want Linux only? Do you want a choice? How much of the bells and whistles are you willing to go away from? And so what I think we're going to see is an awful lot of these coming out in the next year or so. And in fact, actually at Computex, Asia's biggest geek gathering, which is next week, they're talking about these low cost, these stripped down, cheap, small computers are going to be all the rage everywhere. So it's going to be interesting.
Okay. Steve in Silver Spring, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I'm wondering what the computer guys think of the new Adobe Acrobat suite. Just came out with all the collaborative features.
Bill?
Well, I've used Acrobat, but I haven't really gotten too involved with the collaboration features, to be honest with you. I mean, as far as, a viewer and a way to edit Acrobat files, it feels fine. It does feel like they're adding more. I mean, for me personally, I don't use any of those. So for me, they're adding more features I don't want to use, and it just slows the program down. So that's my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, they seem to have come out with some kind of a new web-based suite that's going to compete with the Microsoft Office suite, and I was just wondering if any of you had any experience with it.
I've used a lot of collaboration. I think they're going to get steamrolled by Google. I think they're a little too late. They're going to get stomped, and the big fight's going to be Google versus Microsoft, and more to come on that in the next 5 years. A lot of blood in the streets when that battle's fought.
Thanks, Steve. Let's talk a little bit about the interaction between the TV and the computer and the news that the Netflix player is really is getting a ton of press at $99. It's something that you can use to stream movies. And apparently, I haven't seen it in action, but I've heard from some critics that it's now coming in at a reasonable enough speed that you don't get held up a lot. The complaint I keep hearing, though, is that the choice for movies you can watch over the computer line is really dramatically narrower than what you can get by mail from that Netflix. Bill?
That's what I hear, too. And I really hope that they do, work out some deal where they can up the selection, because that's really, it's a pretty big flaw, but that really is the only flaw. That's sort of out of their hands, I think. I mean, as far as the device, you're right, the price is right. If you have a Netflix account, you're not paying anything extra. If you have a decent broadband account, the image quality is pretty good, and apparently apparently the little box can even handle HD down the road. So if they start encoding stuff in the higher definition, you can take advantage of that if you've got the equipment to do so. So I'm keeping a close eye on it because compared to things like Apple TV and things like the Microsoft, movie service on Xbox, it seems to be the simplest and the one that has the most potential because you're not worried about expiring content or paying anything extra.
And of course, this has been the dream for many years on the idea of getting the postal service out of the movie business entirely. But it doesn't seem to quite come together.
This was the initial business model. Netflix wanted to do this initially, and they had broadband issues. What I find interesting is that any listener who has teenagers in their house knows that all these movies are available for free. And apparently anyone can get any movie at any time instantly, right, the day it's released. And so I guess Netflix is the target audience is older than, let's say, 15 to 24 is what.
And folks who might want to do things legally.
I forgot about that.
I'm guessing a trend will continue, though, where you're young and you experiment. I did, too. I played with a lot of technology. And then as I got older and, valued my time, I just want things to work, and I want it to be simple, and I'm not going to work to get my entertainment. So hopefully that'll happen with this generation, too.
It certainly seems to show a little bit more flexibility on the part of the Hollywood studios than we see from, say, the record industry.
Yes, absolutely. Now, the challenge is, though, what has made Kindle very big in terms of an e-book reader is the content. And so I think what we're going to see is a trend here of you can't bring out great hardware/software without content. You've got to think both sides of the coin because that's what's going to make things work.
Yeah, I was looking at my family's Netflix queue, and there's 80 or 90 movies on there, and about maybe 7 or 8 of them were available for instant watching online.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, from Netflix on to the question of CNET, which I understand has been acquired by CBS for $1.8 billion. Is this a sign of that there's a future for at least some aspects of the news gathering world? CNET, obviously one of the major news sources in the computer world. CBS, which has been moving away from its own website and from some of its investment in its own news gathering operation, obviously sees a future in computer news, Bill.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I like this topic because at around the same time, Ars Technica got acquired by Condé Nast, and it'll be interesting to kind of compare the two. I want to see what the contrast there, because historically, when Condé Nast acquired Wired, they're very respectful, and they let it flourish and kind of run independently, and that's supposed to be the case with Ars Technica. And I really want to see how CBS handles their acquisition, because CNET's a pretty popular brand. They have a lot of popular sites like news.com, and they acquired TV.com and MP3.com and a bunch of others. So that, to me, is a real story, to see if it still retains some independence, if it just gets rebranded everything CBS, or if CBS kind of treats it like its own island and it's their way to represent themselves.
And, of course, the audience for computer news is probably one of the most skeptical about the whole notion of hierarchical media.
Old media equals bad media.
And so the fact that CNET has become an authoritative source over the years certainly makes it a very valuable commodity.
Well, the whole notion of citizen journalism has obviously grown up through the web, and when there is actually some valued sources for these things, it makes a difference.
Well, if we're getting a little too insider for you, Jamie in Silver Spring has a question for those of us who are a little more basic in our understanding. Jamie?
Hello?
Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Sorry, my question's kind of vague. You have to forgive me. Personally, I'm a little bit disinclined towards most gadgetry, things you might, like iPods or any of that kind of stuff. I find it, in most respects, not like unnecessary, but almost more of a burden than it is like a blessing. I find it's frustrating to look, to my cell phone every 5 minutes for a text message or to, let's say, a BlackBerry every other minute for the next or nearest email. And I was wondering if you guys as experts could comment on my perception of this push towards the next gadget, the next operating system, is a false imperative towards, kind of perpetuating a system which doesn't really benefit anybody except for the people who make money off of these things.
Well, it's a great question, Jamie, and I sometimes feel that way too. I mean, in some sense, you may be talking to the wrong folks here because they're deep into that world. But, even you all, I would imagine, sometimes feel a little overwhelmed by how quickly things move now. Or is that not the case? Bill?
Well, I don't feel overwhelmed so much, except when my clients feel overwhelmed, and then I feel overwhelmed. And I definitely do agree that there are plenty of times where, for a lot of people, what they have that exists works fine. And I encourage those people to not upgrade until they really see a valuable need. You know, the iPod for a lot of people, you know, was less of a burden because, you know, for me, I go on a road trip, I bring my iPod. I don't bring a stack of, you know, 20 CDs. So for me, that's definitely an upgrade. And the other thing that that Jamie mentioned I thought was interesting was talking about, you know, the next text message coming in. And I think I kind of agree, because everybody jumps on better ways to stay connected, but then it's kind of assumed that you're going to follow suit too, even if you maybe personally don't want a text message, you don't want to be part of Grand Central and have every phone ring, you don't want to check your email on your portable device every 5 seconds. So I can definitely sympathize. I think we're all in that same boat, but because that's the way things are going, we're kind of stuck doing it too.
John?
We know the company I work for, we have 20 developers, and each one of them works on different projects, and they like to keep in touch with the customer. Now, if I'm paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for a very large software implementation, and I have a problem, I want my developer to respond to me that day, that minute, instantly. I want to know exactly what's going on, and that's what we afford our clients. That, and I think that's a service that maybe from a user perspective is one thing, but in the business world, that response is almost demanded.
Sure,
because
sure. 'Cause
let me tell you something, Bill. If you don't return my call in 5 minutes, I'm going to have Mark in here next week, and he's going to return the call and find me what.
But shouldn't there be some distinction between that kind of expectation of customer service and business relationship and the rest of our lives, where people on a personal level have come to expect instantaneous response to email, when it could be about, you know, whether you're free for lunch next Thursday?
It's absolutely true. And in fact, I'm in the lab that, you know, I'm a director of. It starts with the word human before the word computer, okay? Human-computer interaction lab. And we really, really believe that there's absolutely times for all things. And you have to, there's no global, this is the way it should be. It's about context. And so in a certain context, you better know how to turn that option off. Because do you want to be having some, you know, argument with, you know, three bosses up and your cell phone's ringing? You know, you should actually have some understanding of when it's appropriate, having to do with people.
You're listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. I'm Mark Fisher of The Washington Post, sitting in for Kojo. We'll continue our conversation with the computer guys in a moment. Please stay with us. Coming up at 1, why disagreement actually benefits democracy. From the founding fathers to today's presidential primaries, 13 historical arguments that continue to influence American politics. Today at 1 on the Kojo Namdi Show on WAMU 88.5.
Good afternoon. I'm Matt McCleskey. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, it's Tell Me More with Michelle Martin.
Next time on Tell Me More, so the gal pals of Sex and the City knocked Indiana Jones from box office supremacy.
At 11:30? Oh, that's a booty call.
No, it's not. He's a waiter. He just got off work.
But what do the moms have to say about it? I'm Michelle Martin. The Mocha Moms go to the movies next time on Tell Me More.
That's coming up this afternoon at 2 o'clock here on WAMU 88.5.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from Wolf Track Foundation for the Performing Arts, presenting Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore, Friday, June 20th at 8 p.m. More information is at wolftrack.org. From the Association of American Railroads, today's freight railroads are committed to working hard for the environment by moving a ton of freight 436 miles on just 1 gallon of fuel. More online at freightrailworks.org.
Increasing cloudiness is expected through the afternoon today, with high temperatures in the mid-80s. It's currently 80 degrees in northwest Washington at 12:45 as the Kojo Namdi Show continues.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Fisher, sitting in for Kojo Namdi. It's Tech Tuesday, and I'm joined by the computer guys and gal. And if you'd like to join us, call 1-800-433-8850 for a chance to talk with John Gilroy, Bill Harlow, and Allison Druin. And here's an email from Arlen saying that the Mac is simply built better. One big reason I'm thinking about going to an Apple laptop is the power connection, the email says. I've had 3 laptops die because they use a 25-cent connector soldered to the motherboard for power. Over time, it gets stressed and breaks. Apple has a better connection that doesn't appear to have the same problem. Bill, anybody?
Well, hey. I agree. My wife's laptop, her previous one, got knocked over I don't know how many times and was all dented up. My newer MacBook with the magnetic connection survives. My wife survives my cats, so I agree with that wholeheartedly.
You know, the counterpoint, I was in the computer rental business for many years, and I rented out Toshibas and never had problems with that. So, hey,
okay.
Perception.
Let's talk a little bit about Microsoft's Live Search. This is a new effort to jumpstart Microsoft's long-suffering search engine. Everybody wants to be in first place always. And so the idea here is that they're going to give rebates to people who use Microsoft Search if you then go ahead and buy whatever it is that the search leads you to. Is this going to work, Allison?
I found this fascinating, okay, because literally I heard about this about a week after I had just figured out how to change my default on IE, on Internet Explorer, so that I could go back to Google, because I was having a heck of a time trying to find the things that I knew were there that if I searched on Google would be there. And so then I hear about this. Essentially, they're offering rebates to people saying, hey, folks, if you type in video camera and then you select the model you want, then you can actually see a discount. You can see websites that'll give discounts from 2% to 9% if you're searching with Live Search. These folks are pushing hard. The real thing I want to say to everybody is you've got to make your software better.
It's all about the search.
It's all about the search.
Well, I mean, and the market is voting. I mean, Google owns 62% of the search market, Yahoo with 20%, and Microsoft is down around 9%, still in the single digits, John.
Well. And the perspective from Microsoft is Google owns the HTML search arena and they own the enterprise search arena. And what they're trying to do is buy in market share with this. And I think they look at it as HTML search. What is interesting is that I did my research this morning. And if you Google this topic, you find out that just today Google has released a tool for enterprise search. And so we have Microsoft going after...
What is enterprise search?
Enterprise search, if you work for a large organization, let's say a law firm with 500 attorneys, and there's all kinds of file shares everywhere, and there's all kinds of information in nooks and crannies, and you type in Mark Fisher, you can find all the documents in the law firm that pertain to you. Or if you have to comply with a legal discovery request and you have to have all the instances of John Gilroy and felony, and you have to comply with... And there's a lot of issues. That's why enterprise search is so important. And so I see Microsoft going after Google in the big arena of HTML that the listeners know about. In the smaller arena, and from Microsoft's perspective, a more important arena is enterprise search, is that Microsoft dominates there, and now Google's coming after Microsoft in that market of large organizations trying to comply with Sarbanes-Oxley requirements. And believe me, government agencies are driven crazy with requests for information and have to search through constantly. So.
But they are getting so desperate, John, that I just read today that HP just made a deal with Microsoft that they agreed that they'll put on, you know, on their or any of their new computers, they're going to place Live Search in the toolbar, okay, because that's going to...
They already do it with Symantec and half other...
That's
normal. It's frustrating because that never really benefits the consumer.
It doesn't.
You're stuck with the search
you
don't necessarily want to use.
Exactly.
But Google has successfully managed to persuade people that because of the simplicity and the apparent efficiency of Google Search, that it's somehow less connected to commercial interests. Whereas Microsoft is kind of embracing this idea and saying, hey, yes, we are in bed with our advertisers, and you should use that to your advantage and get some discounts.
That's a good point.
And so the question is, you know, do we say, yeah, I want to be part of that relationship between Microsoft and its advertisers, or do I want to continue to pretend that Google is somehow clean and pure?
Yeah, and it's interesting because I'm not sure. Nobody is clean and pure these days, but, you know.
How about me?
Oh, God. I knew he was going to say
Mark,
that.
The test for you after tonight when you're at home and you have a few minutes free, go to Google and type in Microsoft Search and see if anything comes up at all.
John Gilroy
might have blocked it out.
John Gilroy felony, you know, one page out of 23.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, the top 23 pages of John Gilroy felonies on WAN.
And when you have tried this Microsoft Live Search, what was your frustration? What were you not finding that you otherwise would?
I was actually, there were pages of documents I knew were there because I regularly find things in Google Scholar and so on. And I was literally not finding the things I knew were there, and I had forgotten to bookmark it. And so then suddenly, because of course my hard drive had a meltdown, and so I had to reinstall everything, blah blah blah. And so nothing was set up the way I used to be, and so I was just using Live Search because I didn't even realize I was using Live Search. So, and that's what was happening, and I couldn't find the things I was looking for.
Elizabeth in Arlington, it's your turn.
Hi, I have a very simple question. I am a parent of a high school graduate, and we are going to buy her an Apple laptop, and I wanted to know, wondered what your recommendation, considering the price range can run the gamut from a couple of thousand, or actually a thousand, all the way up to a few thousand. What was your recommendation?
Totally depends on what you're going to use a laptop for.
What are the plans? Going to college. I mean, come on.
No, but I mean, like, are you going into an art program? Are you going in, you know?
No, it's a good question. John?
Just a freshman. She liberal arts, not quite yet, sciences. And,
so basic search and writing papers and that sort of thing?
Yeah.
I would say a good all-around laptop is probably to look at the MacBook line, not the Air, not the Pro, just the MacBook. The middle range one is fine. It's got a DVD burner. It's got an easy way of, you know, archiving files that way. It's definitely powerful enough. Maybe upgrade the memory. But yeah, that's a great all-around computer. You can always hook it up to a monitor, use it like a desktop. It's very flexible. Just lacks the bigger, nicer screen of the Pro models or the higher-end graphics capabilities, which you probably won't even use, to be honest.
You know, Elizabeth, I have to jump in here. I've sent two kids to college and about to send the third. The first one I sent was just a generic Toshiba. The second one was an engineering major. He had to have a tablet, so we got that. And my third one, we're just going to have a little old cheapo Toshiba because there's going to be stuff that's going to be put in that notebook. It's going to be dropped. There's going to be PepsiCo and maybe other beverages are going to be spilled on it, theoretically, in the college.
But
so.
You're not like John, though. You love your kids, right? So you'll probably get them the MacBook.
Yeah, please, do get them the MacBook.
No. And nobody takes a desktop to college anymore?
Oh, no.
That's a nerd. Oh. Boy, you are a nerd, buddy.
So last century.
Wow. Desktop. Have you seen one?
I don't know. That was last week, really.
Okay. All right. Well, John, I understand you have some thoughts about what folks should do. We talked about buying a computer for someone going off to college. At the other end of the lifespan of that of a device, what should folks take into consideration when they are donating or selling or dumping their old computer?
Well, over the years, I've gotten a lot of questions like this. Well, geez, my name is Mark Fisher, and I'm about to donate my computer. What about all my tax records? What should I do? Well, I stumbled on this story. It was just incredible. They had a hard drive on this Columbia spaceship that crashed, and they found the hard drive, and they recovered 99% of the information on it. And so if I have my tax records, because I'm a multi-billionaire, and if I donate it to an organization, I don't know what's going to happen to all that stuff. It seems to me you have to investigate some of these utilities to allow you to wipe your disk. One is called Wipe Disk for $39. Another is called Kill Disk for $50, and it may just be worth it. Now, if you know about the federal government, there's a group up in Fort Meade, and they have a lot of sensitive information on hard drives. I think they have a big mechanical shredder up there that you can put Toyotas in. You can put hard drives. You can probably put this desk in.
I think we need a field trip.
That's the
field
National trip Security Agency.
Oh, we don't talk about that. We just say Fort Meade because I don't want to get arrested. But they have these huge shredders, and that's what they do. And I'm just wondering if more and more people don't realize that these little hard drives that they put in the dumpster or something, there's, you know, they can be compromised.
And you can find links to all the websites that John just mentioned at kojoshow.org. Click on Computer Guy's webpage and links, and you will find those connections right there. And speaking of things that can die, Allison, Google, I understand, knows how hardware can die, and hard drives are failing in record numbers, I would imagine.
Well, okay, since I've become obsessed with hard drives dying, since mine keep doing this, I actually, my husband sent me this link to essentially a Google fellow, Jeff Dean, spoke publicly about their data centers. Now, their data centers, we're talking about over 200,000 servers worldwide. Enormous, all right? And we're talking about, you know, in clusters of 1,800 servers. And so he was basically saying that it's typical that 1,000 individual machine failures will occur, and thousands of hard drive failures will occur, and one power distribution unit will fail, and all of these things can happen, and in a matter of minutes. And so basically, you know, what they're showing is in a massive research study of how bad it is within the first year of getting this hardware. And so this, you know, he basically said, look, bottom line is, you know, redundancy, redundancy, redundancy.
But if you make it past that first year,
they'll never fail.
Then
it's broken in.
Are you good to go after that? I'm looking for some support here because I do none of this redundancy.
Okay. Well, I mean, basically what they decided is that hardware is, you know, it's better to have twice as much hardware that's not reliable than half as much, that's more reliable, because basically they do it everything in software. And so basically when something dies, they immediately assign that that thing to go to another hard drive. And so they've been able to have something, you know, 1,600 servers die and still be able to collect all of this. So to be honest with you, it means have cheaper and more. Do I sound like John? This is scary.
Cheaper and more.
We're really
descending now. When kids get older, you'll believe in cheaper and more.
Yeah, I mean, what it means is that nothing is infallible. And so, you know, and so you've got to, yeah, besides John. Yeah, right. Sure, John. But you've got to back things up. And so I'm actually thinking that, you know, for me, I think I'm going to go with half Mac, half PC because something's liable not to die.
Okay. Well, and Bill, there's, I understand, a really cool video of the Google Android in action. What's going on with that?
Well, just to recap, the Android is basically Google's sort of like beta of their mobile phone platform. It's going to be touchscreen, similar to the iPod. And this was the first video demo I'd seen, and it was pretty cool because, yeah, it's touchscreen like the iPhone, but they're not trying to be the iPhone. They've got their own take on it. So the demo I saw, they showed how it acts a little more like a desktop computer in some ways. In addition to icons where you can choose applications, you can kind of pull sheets down and pick different programs to run them simultaneously. You can slide over and you can have a desktop. You can have widgets running right on the phone itself. They also demoed what they can do with some of their technologies, like their Google Street View, which lets you actually see some of these 360 panoramas they've taken of, you know, major intersections in metropolitan areas.
Danger, danger.
Okay. We'll wrap up with a little trip back to the first topic we discussed today about how many gadgets and gizmos people use. Doris emailed to say she has an iMac desktop, a cell phone, 3 iPods, 3 external hard drives, and soon is buying a laptop. And she says, I don't want one device to handle everything. The thought of us having a single device that does everything and could lose everything makes her shudder. Meanwhile, Martha in Star Tannery, Virginia, out in the country, says she's proud to say that she carries no electronic device. Any kind, the last person in the world without a cell phone or BlackBerry or anything, which must be total anathema to John Gilroy, Bill Harlow, and Allison Druin, the computer guys and Guyette, who've joined us once again here on the Kojo Namdi Show. I'm Mark Fisher of the Washington Post, sitting in for Kojo. Thanks very much for listening. Coming up tomorrow on the Kojo Namdi Show, artful wordsmiths or shadow policymakers, a look at the true legacy of presidential speechwriting, plus playing an imaginary instrument on a real stage. Local air guitarists reach for international stardom. The Kojo Namdi Show, noon till 2 tomorrow on WAMU 88.5.
Good afternoon. I'm Matt McCleskey. The second hour of today's Kojo Namdi Show is up next.
Hi, this is Kojo Namdi. My